The ACB Braille Forum, Volume 62, April 2024, Number 10. Published by the American Council of the Blind. Read by Nancy Gehagen and Thomasine Berg in the recording studio of the Perkins Library. Be a part of ACB. The American Council of the Blind, trademark, is a membership organization made up of more than 70 state and special interest affiliates. To join, contact the national office at 1-800-424-8666. Contribute to our work. Those much-needed contributions, which are tax-deductible, can be sent to Attention Treasurer, ACB, 6200 Shingle Creek Parkway, Suite 155, Brooklyn Center, Minnesota, 55430. If you wish to remember a relative or friend, the National Office has printed cards available for this purpose. Consider including a gift to ACB in your last will and testament. If your wishes are complex, call the National Office. To make a contribution to ACB by the combined federal campaign, use this number, 11155. Check in with ACB. For the latest in legislative and governmental news, call the Washington Connection 24/7 at 1-800-424-8666 or read it online. Listen to ACB reports by downloading the MP3 file from www.acb.org or call 518-906-1820 and choose option 8. Tune in to ACB Media at www.acbmedia.org or by calling 518-906-1820. Learn more about us at www.acb.org. Follow us on Twitter at ACB National or like us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/ACBNATIONAL. Copyright 2023, American Council of the Blind. Dan Spoon, Interim Executive Director, Sharon Lovering, Editor. 225 Rydeker's Lane, Suite 660, Alexandria, Virginia, 22314. Table of Contents. Jacksonville, 2024. How to get certified for paratransit, order dog food, and learn about pre-registration. By Janet Dickelman. Wear Those Walking Shoes, by Katie Frederick. Forever Framily, 4 years of camaraderie and connection, celebrating special friendships in the ACB community, by Belinda Collins. You Asked, We're Answering, Let's Get to Work, by Brooke Jostad. Blind Court Reporter Has Storied Career, by Shelley Keeland. Building a Mindset of Gratitude in Challenging Times, by Christy Varga. Miles Apart, Close at Heart, Keeping Up with My Daughter's Appalachian Trail Hike, by Jennifer Harnish. Advocating with My Whole Self, by Cheryl Cummings. A Better World, by Regina Marie Brink. Layer Plus Layer Equals Me, by Gabrielle Lopez Cafati. What is Jewish Identity, by Lynn Corral. Blindness and Aging, What Can These Old Eyes See, by Reverend Michael Garrett. Affiliate News. Here and There, edited by Cynthia G. Hawkins. High Tech Swap Shop. Upcoming forum themes and deadlines. June 2024. Theme TBA. Deadline April 26, 2024. July-August 2024. Theme TBA. Deadline, May 24, 2024. How to submit articles to the forum. If you wish to submit an article to the ACB Braille Forum, please send it via email to sloving@acb.org as part of the message, or attached as a Word or ASCII text file. Articles should be between 500 and 800 words. Language should be family-friendly. Longer articles may be divided into two or more parts. Are you moving? Do you want to change your subscription? Contact Sharon Lovering in the ACB National Office, 1-800-424-8666 or via email, sloving@acb.org, Give her the information and she'll make the changes for you. Jacksonville 2024. How to get certified for paratransit, order dog food, and learn about pre-registration. By Janet Dickelman. It is hard to believe that as you read this, registration for the 2024 ACB Conference and Convention is just around the corner. In-person hybrid dates are July 5th through July 12th, with Zoom-only sessions being held June 27 through 29. Don't miss the virtual-only ACB Summer Auction on June 22, preceded by 2 days of appetizer auctions and the official call to order via Zoom on June 24 with the reading of the convention standing rules and the first credentials report. Pre-registration details. Registration will open for ACB members on Monday, May 13th at 8 a.m. Eastern Time. On May 20th, registration will be open for non-ACB members. Registration costs for ACB members will be $40. Non-members will be charged $55, but will have the option of joining ACB as a member at large for $10 and then paying the $40 registration fee. If you're registering on site, it costs an additional $10. Registration will close on Monday, June 17 at 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time. You may also register during the convention. To register, you must log in to your member account at members.acb.org. If you do not remember your login and password, you may select Password Reset or call the Minneapolis office at 612-332-3242. Once logged into the member site, select the link labeled Convention. If you have not created a member account at members.acb.org, select the link labeled Create an Account and provide the information requested. After creating an account, you can log in, but it may take up to 24 business hours before you will be able to complete a convention registration, as the Minneapolis office needs to link your member account to our database. If you need assistance in registering, telephone registration will be available by calling Janet Dickelman at 651-428-5059. Once you have selected the ACB Convention link on the members' main page, it will open on an introduction page you should read, then proceed to your preferences page. Please verify your contact information shown. On this page, you will also select whether you will be attending the convention virtually or in person. If you choose to be a virtual attendee, you will not be shown sessions that are only available to in-person attendees, tours, for example. If you choose to be an in-person attendee, you will be shown all virtual and in-person sessions. If you are attending the convention in person, you can pick up your registration materials starting Thursday evening, July 4th. If you are attending virtually and wish to receive the convention program in either Braille or large print, it will be sent to your home address. If you are a virtual attendee requesting a print or Braille program, you must register prior to June 1st. If you are joining us in Jacksonville, you will receive the program when you pick up your registration materials. All registrants will receive Zoom links for the Zoom-only events. Planning to take a tour? Please read carefully the tour description. Many of our tours require a lot of walking and/or standing. If this is difficult for you to do, please consider not taking the tour. Your health and comfort are very important to us. If you can't keep up with the group, there aren't options to stop or rest. If you require the use of a wheelchair to attend a tour, you must bring someone with you who will push your chair. That person must also register for the tour. Our volunteers are not able to assist as wheelchair pushers. Also, if you are more comfortable having your own guide, you might consider attending the tour with a friend or family member. We generally have one volunteer to assist 10 to 15 attendees, so cannot offer personal assistance. Completing convention registration. You can register online at acbconvention.org or by calling 651-428-5059. If you receive voicemail, please leave your name, phone number, time zone, and if you will be attending the convention in person or virtually. We will return your call as soon as possible. If you are interested in any of our tours, plan to register early. If you need assistance registering, If possible, make arrangements for a friend or family member to assist you. ACB is happy to help, but may not be able to return your call immediately, and we don't want you to miss out on a tour you really want to attend. Using paratransit service during the 2024 convention. To obtain a visitor pass to use paratransit in Jacksonville, called JTA Connection, have your provider email your authorization to lwalker@jtafla.com. Once you've done that, call LaToya at 904-265-8949 or email her at lwalker@jtafla.com to let her know the date you will be in Jacksonville and provide your cell phone number and an emergency contact. There are two services under the JTA umbrella. JTA Connection. Reservations must be made in advance. They cannot be made for the same day. Reservations can be called in 7 days per week from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. 904-630-3100. The cost for this ride is $3 each way. Connections Plus. Reservations can be made for a future date or for the same day, 2 hours in advance. Rides are $6 each way for the first 15 miles and $1 extra for each additional mile. To reserve a ride for this service, call 904-404-0848. Note, if using this service from the airport, the cost would be around $20. Ordering dog food. Don't want to weigh down your luggage with food for your dog? Keep it simple. Order food from Scoopmasters. Scoopmasters will provide and maintain our dog relief areas in Jacksonville. Locations of the dog relief areas will be shared via email lists and posted in the convention newspaper as soon as they are set up. If you would like to pre-order dog food to be delivered to your hotel room, call Tim Stone at 661-714-0749 or order online at scoopmasters.com/ACB. Tim says, it's a simple form that asks for name, phone number, brand and type of food. I will call to get the details within 24 hours and I will accept payments at the hotel. Food must be ordered by June 20th to ensure delivery. Assistance at the airport. To assist airline personnel and Marjorie Beeman and her cadre of airport volunteers, if you would like assistance when you arrive at the airport, please submit the following information. Your name, the name of the airline you will be arriving on, your departure city, arrival flight number, departure airline, departure date, departure time, your cell phone number. You can send Marjorie Beeman an email with airline information in the subject line at oleo501625@outlook.com or call her at 512-921-1625. Staying in touch. The conference and convention announce list will be filled with information. If you received updates for the 2023 convention, you do not need to subscribe to the list. If you are not subscribed to the list, send a blank email to acbconvention+subscribe@acblists.org. acbconvention+subscribe@acblists.org. Hotel details. Room rates at the Hyatt Riverfront in Jacksonville are $99 per night plus tax. To make reservations online, go to tinyurl.com/2TU9VP5M. If you prefer to make reservations by phone, call 800-233-1234 and use code G-ACOB. For any convention-related questions, please contact Janet Dickelman, Convention Chair, 651-428-5059 or via email, janet.dickelman@gmail.com. janet.dickelman@gmail.com. Wear those walking shoes. At the time of writing, spring has not sprung. It's time to start digging out those walking shoes and consider forming a team for the 2024 ACB Brenda Dillon Memorial Walk. The walk will take place prior to Sunday evening's general session, July 7. Getting up and moving not only helps you, but also benefits ACB and a state or special interest affiliate of your choice. Funds raised can be split according to your wishes. As an affiliate leader, I know when it comes to fundraising, every ounce, or dollar, helps. So, start stretching, forming your teams, and stay tuned to the ACB Braille Forum and other ACB communication outlets for additional walk details coming soon. Katie Frederick. Forever Framily. 4 years of camaraderie and connection. Celebrating special friendships in the ACB community. By Belinda Collins. March 2024 celebrates an impressive 4-year milestone of the ACB community. This is not just a commemoration of time, but a celebration of connections, camaraderie, shared experiences, and the formation of lasting friendships that have blossomed within its virtual walls. Over the past 4 years, the community has evolved into a space where we, as blind and low-vision individuals, feel not only welcomed, but embraced for who we are. Allison Smitherman, one of our wonderful volunteers that has truly blossomed over the past few years, shares her growth in community. Since becoming a member of the ACB community, I have met many wonderful people and thus have gained some valuable friendships. Over these past 4 years, this community has offered me the opportunity to host and facilitate community calls, which has helped me to overcome my fear of public speaking. Last but not least, through working with others and following their examples, I have learned a lot about how to treat people with kindness and respect. Community has definitely changed my life for the better. Strong friendships have quickly become our cornerstone, offering the strength and understanding that comes from walking the same path. In an environment where challenges can sometimes feel overwhelming, having friends who understand and empathize is invaluable. From celebrating victories to providing a listening ear during moments of difficulty, these friendships are a testament to the strength that comes from mutual understanding and support. Lucy Arguijo, an amazing singer who participates regularly in our community karaoke events, attributes some changes in her life to lasting friendships made in the community. Before I found community, I was in a much different place in my life than where I am now. Thanks in great part to the friendships I have made here. It is because of community that now I get out and socialize more, gather with friends both virtually and in person. I have developed deep, lasting bonds with many of them. My life has definitely changed for the better. Many of us have found a network of people from around the world who understand and empathize with our journey. So many of our connections are not just mere acquaintances. Our precious friend from Finland, Sirku Heinäluoto, shares these thoughts about how the community has changed her life. I found this community about 3 years ago. Since then, almost every day, I share my afternoon coffee with wonderful people who live far away from me, but who are close to my heart and are like family. They have taught me so much about the American lifestyle. Also new skills like crafting techniques, accessible technology, etc. Sharing our gifts, supporting each other, and growing together has really been a blessing to me. America has become such a big part of my life. I really feel like a true Fenerican, and I am happy and proud that the ACB community treats me as one. This unique and special bond that quickly forms among many in the community is often affectionately referred to as Framily, friends who are family. From its inception, the ACB community, under the guidance of its creator, Cindy Hollis, initially set out to create a space where we, as blind people, could connect, share experiences, and have a choice not to feel as isolated during the pandemic when many of us were feeling alone in our homes. Judy Walgang, a very active participant and facilitator, explains how important this community was to her during the pandemic and how it is still impacting her life today. The community gave me a sense of connection and belonging, which I desperately needed in the early days of the pandemic. those feelings have continued to grow exponentially during these last 4 years. Anthony Lewis, who has been a participant for quite some time now, shares about how warm and welcoming the community has been for him since the pandemic. Community is something very special. When we were all very isolated, Cindy Hollis, who was like a cheerful cruise ship hostess that makes you feel welcome, came along and created a space for all of us to get together, even though we are all miles apart. The amazing friendships have not only formed through moments of challenges, but also celebrated in moments of triumph as well. Whether we're overcoming barriers in technology, advocating for accessibility, or achieving personal milestones, we come together as a community to applaud each other's victories, big and small. Diane Scalzi, one of our many Zoom hosts that keeps our events safe, respectful, and welcoming, talks about her journey of growth within the community. I have learned a lot more than I ever expected to know about Zoom. I have enjoyed sharing my knowledge with others. Learning and sharing are such important aspects of our community. Every shared triumph, whether personal or communal, has been an opportunity for us to come together and celebrate, reinforcing the bonds of friendship that make the community truly special. Tony Burrell, who came to the community just after the 2021 ACB Conference and Convention, states, "I have made new friends, and I can only continue to grow." The shared victories have not only uplifted us in our community, but strengthened the bonds of our friendships as well, creating a culture where achievements are collective and every step forward is a win for us all. Cheryl McNeil Fisher, who has had tremendous success with Writing Works Wonders, one of our community events that provides a space for the avid writer to share and collaborate with others, attributes the community for its start. "Advancing beyond barriers" is the tagline for Writing Works Wonders, which came to fruition because of the support, strength, friendship, and love freely given to me within the ACB community. Others in the community have found a shared sense of purpose. Many of our friends have shared stories of how the community has not only provided a space for connection, but has also sparked a sense of direction and meaning in their lives. Darcy Bernard, who is one of our many valued volunteers, often gives of his time to assist others with various technical skills, setting them up for greater success and independence. "The community has given me a place where I feel like I belong, and a place where I feel useful," he explains. "We have found more than just friendship, but a lifeline, a source of strength and encouragement in the face of daily challenges. Witnessing the achievements and resilience of fellow community members not only uplifts spirits, but also instills a sense of hope and possibility." Holly Anderson, who is a frequent attendee of the various crafting events where she has been supported and has gained confidence in her creativity, acknowledges the community for her growth. "This community has given me the confidence to do and try things I would not have ordinarily done in my lifetime." Rhonda Lang, who has become an active participant in our events over the past year, shares her feeling of belonging. "ACB community has done a lot to make me feel like I belong. I have enjoyed learning so much information through the different community calls." While the ACB community thrives in the digital landscape of the Zoom platform, its impact also extends into the physical world. ACB state and national conferences and other social events provide a unique opportunity for us to change our virtual connections into tangible, real-life friendships. The laughter, the warmth of hugs, and the shared experiences during these events solidify the bonds that we have formed online, creating a sense of community that transcends the boundaries of computer screens, smartphones, and other devices. Travis Butler, who is known for his witty sense of humor, but also his compassion for others, explains what the impact of community friendships has meant for him. "Due to the ACB community and all it offers, I have more friendships and connections than ever before in my life. Also, lots of hugs, both virtual and in person. I have become a proud and confident member of the American Council of the Blind as a result." As we look to the future, this community is committed to reaching many others who are blind or low vision. We don't want to be the best-kept secret. The more people that know about us, the more we can provide support and a safe place to grow and flourish. Anyone interested in receiving our daily schedule of events via email can send a request to community@acb.org. As we raise a toast to 4 years of this amazing platform, let's celebrate the close friendships that have transformed lives and the breaking down of barriers to inclusion, redefining the meaning of community. Here's to many more years of forging connections, building friendships, and empowering each other to reach new heights. Happy anniversary, ACB Community.
You asked, we're answering. Let's Get to Work, by Brooke Jostad. In October of 2023, to mark Disability Employment Awareness Month, ACB's Employment Committee developed and disseminated an online survey to better understand the needs and desires of ACB members pertaining to issues of employment. Below is a summary of the results and the actions we plan to take based on survey findings. In the 31 days in which our survey was posted online, we received 72 responses. Survey takers were fairly equally divided between the age group of under 65 and 65 and over, with most reporting congenital vision impairment. Most respondents reported having a college degree, belonging to ACB, and identifying as either fully or partially employed. The majority of respondents also reported being underemployed and stated they are seeking further employment. The survey inquired about common barriers to full employment. 4 common obstacles were identified: transportation access barriers, insufficient job skills training, confusion about resources for finding jobs and applying for them, as well as inaccessible software and spotty computer training. Other less commonly listed barriers included employer ignorance, workplace discrimination, difficulty with self-advocacy during the interview process, and intersectionality challenges. If you are interested in a full chart outlining our survey results, please email Peter Altschul at creatingcommonground@outlook.com. Like all surveys, this survey had shortcomings. We received few responses from people who were unemployed, did not graduate from college, and/or had lost their sight later in life. We would encourage those contemplating future qualitative studies to focus more on these groups. Survey respondents requested assistance in achieving employment-related goals, with many expressing interest in one-on-one mentoring and occupational coaching. Many reported needing training related to workplace technology advancements and assistive technology to make this technology more accessible. Participants requested further assistance with job search, interviewing skills, and resume writing, as well as further access to employers who are particularly receptive to visually impaired and blind job seekers, active job listings, and any additional employment resources. Employment Committee members are excited to tell you about initiatives we are taking to fulfill these requests. First, our Let's Get to Work podcasts feature 30-minute interviews of people successfully employed in various occupations, employers who have hired talented blind people, and programs aimed at linking qualified visually impaired people with employment options. These podcasts are available wherever you listen to podcasts. Additionally, we are partnering with BITS to find ways to work together to address technology challenges and perhaps develop some sort of mentoring program. We have used these results to develop programs for the 2024 ACB Conference and Convention. Tentative activities connected with the virtual convention include supporting BITS to develop a series of sessions over 3 days about artificial intelligence, working with BITS to develop a session to outline strategies to address those inevitable technology-related workplace hassles, organizing a presentation of a program preparing people with disabilities attending community colleges for the workplace, organizing a presentation about learning how to find direction in your life and career. During the in-person convention, we plan to lead a session focusing on self-advocacy in the workplace. We thank those who took the time to participate in our survey and appreciate your vulnerable, detailed responses. We look forward to interacting with you either virtually or in Jacksonville. Please visit our website, www.acb.org/employment-committee. www.acb.org/employment-committee. We always welcome suggestions, which can be emailed to creatingcommonground@outlook.com. creatingcommonground@outlook.com. Let's get to work. Blind Court Reporter Has Storied Career by Shelley Keeland. When I was asked to share the story of my career and how it came to be, I thought about how important it is for me to talk about not only how I was able to achieve my dream, but also how important it is to have a support system along the way. I am totally blind, and I was a court reporter in juvenile court for 28 years. I am the first and only blind person in Arkansas to become a court reporter, and the second person in the U.S. There was one woman before me who was able to somehow find a way to read her steno shorthand notes and provide verbatim transcripts of court proceedings. My situation was different because I attended a school that taught not only the steno and the proper way to produce a transcript, but also something we call computer-aided transcription. We type the shorthand on our steno machine and then transfer all of this information to a computer software program via Bluetooth, which translates most of that steno into English text right on your computer screen. The training for this career is so challenging because we must be certified to type 225 words per minute at 95% accuracy. As you can probably imagine, it is so hard to know when you enter a training program if you can ever achieve this level. It's not just about determination. It's about whether your brain can work so quickly that you automatically take down everything you hear without having time to think about what you're doing. In fact, if you start to think about whether you dropped a word and try to catch up, you lose your rhythm and become thrown off completely. The dropout rate for court reporting students was somewhere around 95%, and they weren't blind. I had no idea if I could make it through the training because there was no guarantee that I could ever write fast enough on the steno machine. We also realized at the time I began the program that we didn't have the Braille or speech technology to read any of the steno I was writing. Our goal was to use computers in the end, but students at the school had to type speed tests directly from their steno notes on a typewriter the old-fashioned way. I learned the steno shorthand and could comprehend it in my head, but I never saw what I wrote myself until I was almost ready to graduate from school. We eventually found the screen reader that could read both the English text and also any steno that did not translate in the computer program as English, but I couldn't have made it through school without the help of my sighted friends. If another student decided they didn't write well enough on a speed test to type it and turn it in for a grade, they would practice by reading my steno to me and typing it for me. We all learned the same shorthand theory, so they could just ask me to tell them what I meant when I had a misstroke. I finally became certified in 1991 after nearly 3 years of hard work toward that end. Then I had the difficult task of trying to find work and break the barriers we all face when we have a disability because employers often don't want to give us a chance. They either think we can't do the job or they don't want to spend the money to make the job accessible. I worked out the accessibility part with the help of Division of Services for the Blind here in Arkansas, so I just had to find a job. It took nearly 2 more years for that to happen. Finally, Judge Wiley Branton gave me the shot I needed. He was a newly appointed judge to the bench in 1993 and started building his staff from scratch. He hired me, and we were able to work together to make sure we had a solution to any unforeseen issues. I wasn't following in the footsteps of another court reporter in that court, so we all started learning together. Now that my career is mostly over, since my retirement in 2021, I still stop and wonder how this could happen. there seemed to be so many obstacles that it couldn't work. I can't emphasize enough how important it is to have a good support system around you. This is also the month where we try to interest potential employers in learning about what we can do instead of what we can't do. We recently lost Judge Branton, but he gave me so much when he decided to think outside the box and give me a chance. I hope this story can help others realize it is possible to achieve our dreams, but we can't do it alone. It truly takes a team, a lot of courage and determination, and belief in yourself. My support group here in Arkansas consists of both blind and sighted friends, as well as my wonderful family. I'm looking for new ways to help support the blind movement in this country and around the world. Together, we can build an extended family so that we can find strength in each other and work toward promoting change in the future to try to eliminate, not just for us, but for future generations, some of the barriers we have faced. Building a Mindset of Gratitude in Challenging Times by Christy Varga. It's a wonder we make it through the day without breaking a bone. How many times have you looked down to see a new bruise and wondered where it came from? It's easy to dismiss it. Random bruises have become a part of life. We bump into things. It is what it is. Honestly, I'm shocked I've never broken an ankle wearing heels at night. I easily ignore these daily unexplained bruises, but it's the emotional bruises that linger and cause more hurt. The bruises we give to ourselves through negative thoughts or when we allow other people's opinions of us and our vision hurt us. The bruises that appear when we have to stop doing something we love for our own safety, or when the doctor tells us our vision is less since our last visit turns from bruises to scars. We carry these scars with us for life, but they are not visible to others. It's at these times we need to change our thinking and find gratitude in our lives. We can't let these bruises and scars keep us from being happy. Creating a positive mindset with gratitude will make challenging times more manageable. I was diagnosed with retinitis pigmentosa at age 13 and told I would never drive and would be blind by the time I was 40. They were wrong about both of those. But I learned early on not to be held back by a disability. I developed a strong mindset before mindset was even a popular topic for personal development. Knowing I have control over my own thoughts and not giving into the fear and sadness of what I have lost or could lose allows me to have a more fulfilling life. This is what I wish for every person who has a disability. I want to share with you three ways to live a life of gratitude so when you're faced with challenges, you can handle them with grace. Here are three tips for practicing gratitude daily and making your bruises and scars less evident. 1. Daily gratitude list. Acknowledge 3 to 5 things you are thankful for daily. Select a journal that makes you smile to write your daily list. Make it special as you do it. Turn on a battery-operated candle. Meditate before your journal. Listen to your favorite relaxing music. Use essential oils. New to this? Make a list of simple things you are thankful for in your daily life. Examples: a warm bed, a great cup of coffee, a friend, family member, a good audiobook narrator. With time and practice, your list will grow. Then take a moment and really feel the gratitude for this in your life. Do you love the feeling of how your warm bed gives you a big hug on cold mornings? How does it make you feel? Warm? Safe? Each day, it will get easier to create your list. 2. Express thank you to others. It's easy to go through our days so focused on what's right in front of us. Our to-do list, family's needs, getting through the day without any major issues. However, when we just focus on what needs to be done, we often forget to stop and see how others are helping us. Take time to intentionally say thank you to someone each day. Did someone at the store help you find something? Look him or her in the eyes and truly thank them. Did a friend invite you for a walk? Go for the walk and thank them for the great idea. Being intentional with a daily thank you to someone actually makes you feel better. 3. Flip the thought. Turn your frustration into celebration. We all can get frustrated. I get annoyed every time I kick one of those wet floor signs and it crashes to the ground with thundering explosion. Seriously, how can something so small make so much noise? But when we get frustrated, annoyed, embarrassed, we can take that moment and turn it around. I'm thankful I kicked the sign and didn't fall over it. I get frustrated when I can't drive myself. Then I think about all the crazy, crappy drivers on the road and celebrate that I don't have to be the one to navigate through them. I also celebrate our family doesn't have to pay for 2 car insurance plans, gas for 2 cars, or ever have 2 car payments. Find a way to turn your frustration into celebrations. Take a moment today to practice gratitude. It's something you can do no matter your level of vision. It only takes a few minutes, it's free, and you don't even have to move from where you are right now. This simple daily practice will change your life. Miles apart, close at heart. Keeping up with my daughter's Appalachian Trail hike. By Jennifer Harnish. Reprinted from Bay Lines Express, November 22, 2023. On March 8, 2023, my daughter Celia and her boyfriend Jasper began their 2,198-mile through hike of the Appalachian Trail, AT. In AT lingo, they were doing a NOBO, northbound, through hike, beginning at Springer Mountain in Georgia with the goal of ending at the top of Mount Katahdin in Maine. Not until she was a week into her hike did I realize fully that, as a mother who happens to be blind, I would have to figure out creative ways to stay tuned into her adventure. Our iPhones played the largest role in keeping us connected. Most days I would hop on the Find My app to see what town she was in and how many miles away she was. If I had time, I Googled away, inevitably finding websites that gave great detailed descriptions of the town and its relationship with the AT. The many detailed blog posts by other through hikers elucidated specific features of the flora, fauna, and hike challenges they might encounter. My anxious friend even thought to send me links to news posts about the impact of flooding on NOBO hikers in Vermont. Being raised by a parent who encouraged and modeled the use of detailed descriptive language, Celia texted me well-narrated videos with exhilarating nature sounds like loons, waterfalls, rushing rivers they had to cross, and 50-mile-per-hour wind gusts as they crested Mount Musilaukee in the White Mountains of New Hampshire. Unfortunately, recordings could not capture sounds of the snakes, bears, and moose she encountered along the way. When I was feeling a bit of sadness over the extent of our separation, I would read a variety of books from Bard, Bookshare, and Audible on through-hiker adventures from the past, the most well-written being Bill Bryson's A Walk in the Woods, which detailed his own NOBO hike in 1996. Celia, known by her AT trail name Pickles, called us every week or two when battery charge and cellular connections allowed. I enjoyed her tales of trail magic, food set out by trail angels with her favorites, including fresh grilled cheeseburgers, ice-cold southern sweet tea, a pile of biscuits with red-eye gravy, and a bucket of fresh blueberries she picked as a swap for sleeping in the angel's enormous metal airplane hangar during a lightning storm. Calls and messages included justifications for the many strangers they met when hitching rides, the favorite being squeezed in the back of an electrical company bucket truck to nearby towns to restock supplies. Hearing her asthma pick up while in the Carolinas sparked a bit of worry for her health, but she got the chance for some adulting when figuring out how to get her doctor to call in a prescription to a small-town pharmacy they reached a day's hike away after a rough night with little sleep. She also shared trail news about Shades, the blind hiker a month ahead of them who was hiking with her guide dog. On July 7th, I called her to sing Happy Birthday as she celebrated her 19th birthday on the trail. A Venmo gift soon arrived on her phone direct from my Massachusetts bank account. Our virtual connections did not outweigh the one time I got to wrap my physical arms around her when she returned home for 1.5 days in early August after calling for a rescue while in western Massachusetts after days and days of continuous rainfall. The hug ended abruptly, though, when I inhaled the horrible stench of 2 weeks of accumulation of sweat and grime on her body, hair, and clothing. Off to a hot shower with lots of soap she went. The eventual availability of Be My AI provided detailed descriptions of many photos she sent later in the trip, included, and IRA agents used their talents to describe maps and photos I came across on blog posts and websites. An agent's description of an artist's 10-foot-long rendering of the entire trail almost got me to buy now. I was tempted by the idea of having the puff paint and other tactile materials adhered to the map arriving at my home. I did not order that item, but it still remains in my Etsy shopping cart for a potential family project. On September 11, I experienced my favorite part of the trek when picking up the kids at the end of their hike in Maine. Jasper's, Sticky's, father and I and my guide dog Lisa picked them up in Millinocket, Maine, where thankfully they had showered and done laundry after arriving at the hiker's hostel after conquering the trail. I even had my own chance to provide some trail magic to them and one of their hiking friends, Trail Name Podcast, when I treated them all to dinner at Duck Fat, one of Portland's famous restaurants. I made more use of my iPhone by navigating to the eatery with the GPS and reading the menu on the phone. After Celia's return home, there were more non-visual elements of the hike to experience. I am still finding clumps of AT mud in our shoe baskets and under her bed. Her calves still have a muscular tone. The hole in the sole of her last pair of hiking shoes signifies the many miles of trail they suffered under her feet. Her hair has grown back to chin length. Her friends shaved her head entirely before her departure. Now that was a tactile experience to behold. Personally, I can't wait to set foot on the AT in a future hike of my own, likely as a lowly day hiker who will enjoy a comfortable bed and hot meal at the end of my trek. Caption: Celia and Jasper, standing atop the Mount Katahdin sign, hold their arms up in the air in victory. The wooden sign reads, Katahdin, Baxter Peak, elevation 5,267 feet, northern terminus of the Appalachian Trail. Two other hikers stand next to the sign, perched on rocks, arms and hiking poles up in the air, as if to say, we did it! Advocating with My Whole Self by Cheryl Cummings. This year, the Multicultural Affairs Committee asked its members to write about intersections and how their intersections influence their engagement as a member of a local chapter, a state affiliate, a special interest affiliate, and/or ACB National. In her 1989 article, Professor Kimberly Crenshaw coined the term intersectionality, as she wrote about the interacting and compounding impact of the existence of racism and sexism on the lives of Black women. For many years, intersectionality was a concept used by legal academics. As the concept of intersectionality became mainstreamed, it was understood that different intersecting identities, such as race, gender, class, ethnicity, and disability affect the way we as individuals function and are impacted within societal systems. In her book Intersectionality, Patricia Hills Collins wrote, "If we were to ask what is intersectionality, we would probably get contradictory and varying responses. Most, however, would probably accept the following general descriptions. Intersectionality investigates how intersecting power relations influence social relations across diverse societies as well as individual experiences in everyday life. As an analytical tool, intersectionality views categories of race, class, gender, sexuality, nation, ability, ethnicity, and age, among others, as interrelated and mutually shaping one another. Intersectionality is a way of understanding and explaining complexity in the world, in people, and in human experiences. Irrespective of what the critics say, I think intersectionality shows that there is complexity and unknown variations of how institutional systems impact the lives of individuals. For me, this means that to make a positive change in the lives of all people, we have to be open to listening to people whose input was historically ignored. For me, as a member within a local chapter, a state affiliate, a special interest affiliate, or acting on a national level for the American Council of the Blind, it means that even though I am blind, I am also defined in other ways. I am a Black woman, an immigrant, a Midwesterner, etc. My day-to-day reality as a blind person may be similar on some level, but is also uniquely different. It may mean that when I apply for a job, not only am I contending with ableism, but I am also contending with racism, sexism, etc. Therefore, as an ACB member, I may ask my state affiliate to support legislation which opens the doors for people with disabilities to become employed, and legislation which supports the civil rights of racial and ethnic minorities. This may also mean fighting to have an accessible electronic ballot and protesting the drawing of district boundaries because it diminishes the impact of Asian Americans, Black Americans, the poor, women. Accepting that intersections are real and have impact means that our assessment of what matters becomes more difficult and more complex. It means we have to listen to each other and understand how the different ways we are impacted by social, economic, and political structures influence the solutions we identify to resolve issues. Intersections call on us to accept that our lives and the ways we interact with institutions are not all the same. Therefore, as a membership organization, ACB should be willing to work with its members to understand the complexity and to use that understanding to position the organization to better meet the needs and challenges of current and future members. A Better World by Regina Marie Brink. As a child, I had no idea we were poor. I knew my grandmother, on my mother's side, rushed in from work sometimes when we were there, smelling of fish, because she worked at the cannery. I didn't know then she worked 10-hour days and was not allowed to sit down. She still made a full meal of rice, beans, fresh homemade flour tortillas, and some kind of meat or main dish every day. Things like tamales or enchiladas or chicken mole, my favorite, were for holidays and special occasions. I grew up hearing Spanish spoken and sung around me. However, unbeknownst to me, my mother and father were severely punished as children for speaking Spanish in school, including my mother being struck with a paddle by the principal when she was six. My family, as a result, stressed English. Other Hispanic children looked down on us when we went to school. I still find myself deflecting disparaging comments about my family and me because my siblings and I are not fluent in Spanish. I tried to teach myself in high school, and my uncle taught me to sing in Spanish. I can write out what I want to say and read it fluidly. This still does not mean I am fully accepted by other bilingual speakers. I also realized early on that my skin was much lighter than the rest of my family. Each of my brothers, who appear Hispanic and have darker features, have been beaten by the police, though never arrested or charged with any crime. They also received a very different and much lower quality of education than I did. Most likely, this was because I received services through the Resource Program for the Blind, and I attended different schools than my brothers. I also realized that I was sometimes treated much better when the rest of my family was not around. Aside from black curly hair, I have hazel green eyes and a lighter complexion. Without my family, people think I might be Italian or Greek. Someone who went to my predominantly Caucasian high school once asked me if my grandmother was our maid. I have had to sit in groups where Hispanic people are disparaged and called derogatory names. Early on, I decided I would not pass for Caucasian. I would speak up and defend the family I loved. I soon realized, too, that my connection to my ancestors and traditions was much stronger than most of the children around me. My mother and father, however, were fighting battles of their own. They insisted on bringing me up to be self-sufficient and independent, teaching me blindness skills themselves as I was able to do them, just as sighted children grow up with increasing responsibilities. However, this went against the customs and traditions of our culture. The urge to take care of me and to just keep me safe within the family was very strong. My parents were berated for the way they were raising me. My uncle once asked my father, "Why are you sending her to college? All she's going to do is wash dishes and have babies anyway." This could not be further from the truth. I have worked since I was 16 and have been very active in my community, sitting on boards, participating in parenting and advocacy organizations, and serving in various capacities at church, all while raising 4 children, partly as a single parent. Many times, people who wish to embrace the Hispanic community concentrate on those who need Spanish translation. This is valuable. However, many of us speak English just fine. Our issues surrounding inclusion, dignity, and microaggressions are very different. We must fight our families to achieve independence and the rest of society to receive equity, even among our fellow blind and low vision advocates. I have been in many uncomfortable situations where a colleague who is blind or has low vision has made an ethnically charged or very bigoted statement in front of me, and I am faced with a choice. Do I say something or let it pass to keep our focus on the work we are doing together? If I let it pass, how much worse will it get? What do I do with the hurt I feel? What if it drives others like me away from the cause? I have chosen, whenever I can, to be as courteous as possible, but to insist on equity and inclusion wherever I go, not only for Hispanic people, but for all people, no matter their race, who they love, or their limitations or disabilities. Not everyone was blessed with parents like mine who taught me to speak up and stand strong. Join me in this resolve so we can make a better, safer world for all. Layer plus layer equals me, by Gabriel Lopez Cafati. It was upon reflecting on each one of the stages of my life up to now, of course, that I realized that each stage is like a layer, like the layers of a cake or a sushi roll, like the rings of a tree. I can actually view the entirety of my life just by picturing each stage layered upon each other. I was further fascinated by the realization that each layer builds on the previous one, and at the same time, each layer supports the next one. I think the first of my layers is very easy to identify, as it is marked by my cradle. Not much I can or would actually want to do about that. I was born and raised in a small country in Central America. Growing up, I always detected something about me was different. But then again, aren't we all supposed to be different? Yes, I know that now, that I can see the entire cake, sushi roll, or tree. However, that was not always the case. Having been diagnosed with a hereditary retinal degeneration was the eureka not just for myself, but for my family. I was different because I couldn't see the world in the same way as my cousins and friends. Therefore, I was more sensitive, more artistic, and less driven to sports. Yep, there was the answer. Was I happy to know that I was going blind? No. Was my family happy with this reality? No. Nevertheless, we could all feel a sense of relief, because as humans, we did not like the answer, but we were content to know that there was an answer. As I grew older, I noticed that my next layer was marked by a few themes. First, my fascination with a better life, a more equitable society, and a more just government system. Throughout this process, my admiration of the United States grew fonder, and my dreams of migrating grew stronger. On the other hand, my strong ties to family and the protection that came along kept holding me back. The other theme ruling my life was the realization of my same-sex attractions and the fact that my few girlfriends had been more like best friends. I will always look at this stage with pride because I could have stayed in Honduras, married a girl, and enjoyed the protections afforded to me by virtue of being part of my family. However, I chose the more difficult, the less comfortable, yet more authentic of the crossroads. As I decided to become a part of this great nation, the first layer I had to deal with was my blindness. I had to if I was to recreate my life under my new circumstances. Learning assistive technology, mobility, Braille, and independent living skills were the priority. I devoted myself with great passion and dedication to studying everything I could. Along the process, I was exposed to amazing role models and subsequently organizations like the Florida Council of the Blind, FCB, and the American Council of the Blind, ACB. I also learned about other organizations that, well, let's just say I didn't care for that much. At the same time, I was faced with something that, up to that point, I had not experienced in my life: freedom. I was free of judgment and preconceived notions of what or how my life should be. In short, I experienced what is commonly known as coming out, and I never felt better. It was then when I found the place that I call home, Blind LGBT Pride International, BPI. For the first time in my life, and from there forward, I felt that all of who I am was represented in one place. All of these stages were what I now refer to as the layers, each one building upon the previous one, each one supporting the next one. All were necessary for me to become my authentic self. Some of the layers were filled with happy memories, some with huge challenges. Many of the layers consist of happy memories. Many others are filled with bitter tears. In times of fear, I have wondered if I should have just stayed in Honduras. It would have been easier for sure. When I visit, I think to myself, no wonder I left. Today, I understand that I am where I am meant to be, physically, emotionally, mentally, and spiritually. And rather than being content, I am happy. Many people have described me as a very giving person. I would like to gift you with something. I would like to gift you, the reader of this piece, with a slice of that cake or that sushi roll, with a carving of that tree trunk. I must warn you, though, should you just try a crumble of the cake, you may find it dry. If you try just a piece of the sushi roll, you may just get the harsh wasabi. And if you only take the outer core of the tree trunk, you may find it to be dented by the elements. In order to enjoy the fullness of who and what I am, I must invite you to experience all the layers with an open mind and a welcoming heart. You may be surprised. The overly sweetness of the cake filling may be the perfect complement to the dry layers. The fresh salmon may soften the strength of the ginger. And the entirety of the rings may be the most beautiful and authentic artwork from nature. After trying every layer, you may well decide that you do not care for me, but please do not make that call before you give all of me a chance. I must close with a warning. While I am still alive, layers will still continue to form, so I will surely extend the same invite a few layers later. Who knows? That layer from the future may be the icing you needed to understand all the layers enclosed. What is Jewish Identity? By Lynn Corral. Jewish identity means many different things to many people, whether they are Jewish or non-Jewish. Many people think of Judaism as two things, Israel and the Holocaust. There are many eons of history that go beyond those simple tropes. At a talk I went to on February 9, Jewish identity is culture, nationality, ethnicity, gastronomic Judaism, as one rabbi told me, education and learning, religion and practice, and even a racial group, even though many Jews are white. But there are about 1 million Jews of color. There are only 16 million Jews in the world. 7 million are in Israel. Only 0.2% of the world is Jewish, and Jews comprise 2% of the United States. Jews were only allowed to have certain professions in medieval times, and there were all sorts of tropes about blood libel, meaning that Jews were responsible for killing Christ and for killing Christian children. Many Jews were forced to convert, but even if they could convert, the powers that be did not trust them, since they knew that they were Jewish by birth. There was a period that this speaker, Nancy Koppelman, called emancipation in the 1800s. This was a period when Jews thought of themselves as from the country they lived in the diaspora, when they were dispersed all over the world. They could engage in all sorts of professions, but that did not last long. Anti-Semitism will never leave us because Jews are a convenient group for people to blame things on, said Koppelman. When Jews were moneylenders and bankers, that was the only profession they were allowed to pursue. They read better than other groups, and people resented that. Jews were blamed for the economic strife in Europe. During the economic and political strife, many came to the United States. Even if people did not practice Judaism and were Jewish by ethnicity and culture, they could still be killed in the Holocaust. Since October 7, there is greater anti-Semitism. In Washington, there are not that many Jews. When I lived in Alaska, even fewer people were Jewish. In ACB, we have talked about being a minority within a minority. This was a term from an article and one with which we agree in the Jewish Hour. We are minorities in ACB as Jews, and we are a minority within the Jewish community as blind people. There was a need for Jews to get together to educate non-Jews and to be supportive of each other in ACB. Also, many people do not understand the many facets of Judaism. As explained above, Jews are a very small part of the world and American population. There are large Jewish communities in New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago. People who consider themselves culturally Jewish do not pray, go to synagogue, celebrate holidays, know Hebrew, or generally do not believe in God. However, some of my relatives spoke Yiddish, which was common in Europe in the 1800s. That was the way I grew up, even though we did go to people's coming-of-age celebrations, a bar or bat mitzvah. Being Jewish is a culture, food, sharing holidays in a secular way such as Passover. Passover is about freedom, although Rabbi Lenny says every holiday is about one form of freedom or another. Most people do not know about the Holocaust, and it is not being taught in schools. It is up to us to be curious and ask questions and to honor different cultures. Many Jews marry outside of the religion, and I think there will be even fewer Jewish people than there are now. Thank you for listening.
Blindness and Aging. What Can These Old Eyes See? By Reverend Michael Garrett. Some grow old gracefully, others grow old tastefully. Some grow old with frosty attitudes. I want to grow old with an attitude of smooth. At a certain age, the overwhelming majority of us will experience changes in vision. That has its own set of clinical and psychological issues. But growing old as a blind person is something in which I have personal experience. Sometimes I believe having sight can be a distraction. Don't get me wrong, I missed the little vision I had. It was precious and allowed me more independence. But without it, in the midst of growing older, I have a new perspective on life. I now see things about myself and others that I couldn't see earlier. As vision dims and light turns to darkness, a whole new panoramic view of life has opened up. When I look at myself, I see a person trying to live up to the virtues related to my calling. Trying to be more loving, seeking peace, spreading joy, exhibiting kindness, self-control and patience while questing for truth. These are the characteristics I hope to put on display. As a result, I try to consider others' interests and needs equally as important as mine. It doesn't always work out that way, but the intent is there. So when I look at others, I see more deeply who that person is rather than what they look like. I've discovered that beyond the physical beauty of a curvaceous lady and the bulging muscles of a good-looking man, there's a real person in there. As I look inward at myself, I try to take stock of my actions, words, and attitude with the understanding that my behavior has an impact on others' feelings. In that same vein, I use my experience to see what others may be feeling or thinking. I've concluded that all of us have something to offer society. The question is, how can each person be encouraged to put their best foot forward? That is my quest, to keep growing myself and encourage others to be their best selves. We are better together, and we can do so much more. It took me a long time to see these things, but my eyes are open, and I see better now than ever. Affiliate News. ACB Ohio Awards by Vicky Prayan. Do you know an Ohioan who helps blind and visually impaired people in some way, such as reading mail, running errands, working on technology, or housekeeping? Has a group or organization in your Ohio community provided a service, donated funds for a project, or helped in some way? Have you read an article about blindness, adaptive equipment, or new techniques that stood out? Do you know an Ohio teacher of the blind and visually impaired, or an employer who has gone the extra mile? If you answered yes to any of these, then consider a nomination this year. ACB Ohio has 7 awards, which we would like to present to show appreciation or to honor a person or a group. For more specific information, go to www.acbohio.org/convention/awards and read about the awards. You can write your own nomination freehand or use the simple form provided. Send nominations or questions to acbo.director@gmail.com or contact this year's awards committee chair, Vicky Prayan, directly at vickyprahin@gmail.com. Here and There, edited by Cynthia G. Hawkins. The announcement of products and services in this column does not represent an endorsement by the American Council of the Blind, its officers, or staff. Listings are free of charge for the benefit of our readers. The ACBE Forum cannot be held responsible for the reliability of the products and services mentioned. To submit items for this column, send a message to slovering@acb.org or phone the National Office at 1-800-424-8666 and leave a message in Sharon Lovering's mailbox. Information must be received at least 2 months ahead of publication date. Sad news from Duxbury. David Holliday, who worked at Duxbury for many years, passed away in a hospital on Thursday, February 15th, following an accident at home that morning. David was a cancer survivor and valiantly battled multiple medical problems over his last 5 years. David was an early innovator in Braille software. Together, he and his wife, Karen Navy, founded Raised Dot Computing, later Braille Planet, in 1981. David's early work on Apple II computers was groundbreaking in support of accessibility for blind users through speech and production of Braille and of print from Braille input. He went on to support production of Print Math from Nemeth Code Mathematics Braille. Later work at Raised Dot Computing culminated in the introduction of Megadots, an innovative product with unparalleled support for Braille formats. David and Karen joined Duxbury Systems in 1999 and have been part of the family ever since. David's work at Duxbury focused largely on extending the reach of DBT to many, many countries and languages around the world. Though confined to bed over the last several years of his life, David's passion for Braille wouldn't allow him to rest. He was working until his very last day. Memorials may be made in his name to Oxfam America. give.oxfamamerica.org. The Greater Boston Food Bank, my.gbfb.org, or Westford's Cameron Senior Center, westfordma, friendsofcameron.com. To sign the guest book, visit www.dolanfuneralhome.com. www.dolanfuneralhome.com. The Habil One Portable Keyboard for Your Smartphone. The Habil One is a small, portable Braille keyboard that is the size of a phone and fits easily in your pocket. You can use your Habil One in public, even while standing, with your phone secured in your bag. With 8 tactile buttons, you can control your entire smartphone or tablet for both iOS and Android. It connects seamlessly with any phone using Bluetooth. From unlocking your phone to typing texts in Braille, navigating with VoiceOver or TalkBack, you can truly do it all. The cool thing is, you don't even need to know Braille to use it. The Habil One is available at www.iamhable.com. On Amazon, tinyurl.com/4xpc6khm, or through more than 15 resellers in the United States. For more information, send an email message to support@iamhable.com. New kids' books from National Braille Press. Newly available in the children's section is When Reuben Plays by Gracie Zhang. It's available in contracted UEB for ages 4 through 8. For the budding astronomer, take a look at Pluto, Not a Planet, Not a Problem by Stacy McNulty. It comes in contracted UEB Braille for ages 4 through 8. For more information, visit shop.nbp.org or call 617-266-6160, extension 520. Best and worst states for eye health. Rx Safety today released a study on the best and worst states for eye health, after analyzing 7 key factors in all 50 states and D.C., using the most recent data from the CDC, KFF, and BLS. The 10 best states are Hawaii, California, Oregon, Washington, Iowa, New York, Utah, Maryland, Colorado, and Alaska. The 10 worst states are West Virginia, Kentucky, D.C., Florida, Mississippi, Louisiana, Arkansas, Oklahoma, Tennessee, and South Carolina. High Tech Swap Shop. Looking for: I'm looking for a Perkins Braille writer in good condition or some sort of Braille note taker. Contact Tanya Smith at 269-221-3769. You may call or text. Looking for: I'm looking for a good working XP computer or laptop with old JAWS on it. Contact Mary Lynn Piefo, Columbus, Ohio Chapter, at 614-890-4563, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. ACB Officers. President, Deb Cook Lewis. First term, 2025. 1131 Liberty Drive, Clarkston, Washington, 99403. First Vice President, David Trott. First term, 2025. 1018 East Street South, Talladega, Alabama, 35160. Second Vice President, Ray Campbell. First term, 2025. 216 Prestwick Road, Springfield, Illinois, 62702-3330. Secretary, Denise Colley. Final term, 2025. 26131 Travis Brook Drive, Richmond, Texas, 77406-3990. Treasurer, Michael Garrett. First term, 2025. 7806 Chaseway Drive, Missouri City, Texas, 77489-2333. Immediate Past President, Kim Charlson. 57 Grandview Avenue, Watertown, Massachusetts, 02472. ACB Board of Directors. Christopher Bell, Pittsboro, North Carolina, first term, 2024. Donna Brown, Romney, West Virginia, first term, 2024. Gabriel Lopez Cafati, Miami Lakes, Florida, first term, 2026. Cecily Laney Nipper, Covington, Georgia, partial term, 2024. Terry Pacheco, Silver Spring, Maryland, first term, 2026. Doug Powell, Falls Church, Virginia, second term, 2024. Rachel Schroeder, Springfield, Illinois, first term, 2026. Kenneth Semyon Sr., Beaumont, Texas, first term, 2024. Connie Sims, Sioux Falls, South Dakota, first term, 2026. Jeff Tom, Sacramento, California, second term, 2026. ACB Board of Publications. Penny Reeder, Chair, Montgomery Village, Maryland, third term, 2025. Jeff Bishop, Tucson, Arizona, partial term, 2024. Cheryl Cummings, Seattle, Washington, second term, 2025. Zelda Gebhard, Edgley, North Dakota, second term, 2024. Cachet Wells, Jacksonville, Florida, first term, 2024. Accessing your ACB Braille and eForums. The ACB eForum may be accessed by email on the ACB website via download from the webpage in Word, plain text, or Braille Ready file, or by phone at 518-906-1820. To subscribe to the email version, contact Sharon Lovering, Slovering, @acb.org. The ACB Braille Forum is available by mail, in Braille, large print, NLS-style digital cartridge, and via email. It is also available to read or download from ACB's webpage and by phone, 518-906-1820. Subscribe to the podcast versions from your second-generation Victor Reader Stream or from https://pinecast.com/feed/acb-braille-forum-and-e-forum.